Good afternoon, everyone. I call this meeting of the Senate Education Committee to order. It is 3:30 p.m. here on Monday, January 29th. We are in the Belts Committee Room in the beautiful, wonderful, and somewhat wet state capital of Juneau. Just a reminder for folks who are in the room, if you could please mute your cell phones. Members present today are President Stevens, Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Keel, Senator Bjorkman, and myself, Senator Tobin. Please let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. I want to thank Joseph from the Juneau LIO for moderating today's meeting, and also a big thank you to Mary Gwen for documenting today. For those who are interested, we do have printed copies of the presentations available by the door and also uploaded on BASIS. Today's meeting, we're going to be focused on the topic of youth experiencing homelessness and their trajectory in education. We're going to hear three presentations on this topic. Just to let folks know that this summer I had the awesome opportunity to participate in the National Council of State Legislators Youth Homelessness Fellowship, and that's where the beginnings of this hearing were germinated. Today we're going to hear from Schoolhouse Connection, which is a nonprofit organization working to overcome houselessness through education. We will also be hearing from the Anchorage School District, which deals with youth experiencing homelessness every day. And we'll also receive a presentation from the National Center for Homeless Education. First up, we have folks from Schoolhouse Connection. Schoolhouse Connection works with early childhood programs, schools, providers, and families to address youth homelessness. Staff from Schoolhouse Connection has helped craft federal policy related to youth homelessness, including amendments to the McKinley-Vento Act. Barbara Duffield is the executive director of Schoolhouse Connection, and she is joining us today along with Rod Montz, director of state policy. Ms. Duffield, before joining the organization, was the director of the education for the National Coalition of Homelessness. She also has served as the director of policy and programs at the National Association for Education of Homeless Children and Youth. Ms. Duffield, thank you so much for joining us, and it's good to see you again. If you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation when you are ready.
Thank you very much. It's nice to see you as well. My name is, again, Barbara Duffield, Schoolhouse Connection. We are a national organization working to overcome homelessness through education. We work prenatal through post-secondary, providing practical assistance, hands-on assistance to schools all over the country. Again, the policy work at the state level, you'll hear from Rod Montz shortly. And also we have a youth leadership and scholarship program, so we're directly supporting young people who are experiencing homelessness. I want to start today by actually going to the third slide, just to take a look at where we are with student homelessness in the state. And this really mirrors national trends as well, where we see a decrease during the pandemic, during virtual learning, when the eyes and the ears of the school system really were not on students, and so they were not there to identify students experiencing homelessness. And again, we're seeing this nationally too. With the return to learning, we see increased numbers of homelessness, and actually homelessness now higher than it was during the pandemic. I want to just make three points about this particular slide. One, we know we're still under-identifying. There's a lot of research out there showing that the actual prevalence of youth homelessness is 50 to 100% times higher than what schools actually see. Also, we know that homelessness, the prevalence is the same in urban, rural, and suburban areas. It's just a lot more hidden. So the numbers don't reflect that, but we know that that prevalence is there. And the last thing to say is just that we also know that the identification that schools do is assisted by some amount of targeted funding. We did a study with the University of Michigan the last year. 25% of all school districts across the country reported zero students experiencing homelessness. Of those districts that reported zero, 92% did not have any dedicated funding. So that plays a role as well. On the next slide, you can see sort of this question is, particularly when we're talking about youth who are homeless, children who are homeless, where are they? We don't see them typically. And this is really the breakdown of where students are living when they're first identified as experiencing homelessness. And you can see here, too, Alaska looks similar to other parts of the country where the majority are not in a shelter. They're not on the street. They're staying temporarily with somebody else. So just a couple points to make about this. These are not static groups. Young people move between all of these situations during the course of the year. There's not shelter in most communities. People are afraid of shelter. There may not be motels. And the youth who are in the most invisible situations, those are staying temporarily with others, their outcomes are often, and we know this from, again, from various studies, as they have similar negative academic and life outcomes as those who are staying in motels or shelters. So it's a very vulnerable group of young people. On the next slide, just to make the point that homelessness is an intersectional issue, it really is a cross-cutting issue. So, for example, we look at students with disabilities. In Alaska, 1 out of every 4 students who's homeless also has an identified disability, and also, too, with students who are English learners. So as we're looking at policies on special education or policies for English learners, we need to be attuned to homelessness and to the mobility that accompanies homelessness and whether these students are getting all the services that they need. On the next slide, this really sort of sums up where we're at in terms of the intersection of homelessness and education. You have barriers that are created by homelessness to getting an education, and then the challenges in getting an education loops back into experiencing homelessness as an adult. So children and youth who are homeless are moving frequently. There's a lot of trauma involved in what leads to their homelessness, the experience of homelessness. They're very invisible in communities. The sort of requirements for enrollment that make sense for a child with stable housing may actually form a barrier to a youth who's experiencing homelessness. All the physical effects of homelessness that get in the way of learning. And then those other responsibilities in terms of caring for siblings or parents. The result of all of that we see in terms of declining enrollment, higher rates of chronic absence, mental health challenges, graduation rates. Essentially, the crises in public education that we're seeing today are very much driven, to a certain extent, by homelessness, and particularly when it's not addressed. And again, all of that means lack of education is the number one risk factor for experiencing homelessness as a young adult. On the next slide, you can see the stats, the poll. I'm not going to read the statistics to you here. These are the statistics from, again, Alaska schools. I just want to make a couple points. Chronic absence. In order to learn, you have to be in school. You have to be in school on a regular basis. And that is a challenge that has gotten worse since the pandemic for all students, but particularly for students experiencing homelessness. So nearly 3 out of 4 students who are identified in Alaska as experiencing homelessness are chronically absent. And we see the impact on graduation rates. And here the point that I want to really make is that homelessness has an impact on graduation that is above and beyond poverty. So there's a difference, a big difference, significant difference between the graduation rate of students who are homeless versus students who are economically disadvantaged. So that's something that we need to pay attention to, too. It really is a specific factor that has a unique impact. On the next slide, just a range of the federal protections and services that are in place. And I believe that most likely Dave and Eric are going to talk in more detail about some of these protections. The one in the orange box from the Kini-Vento Act, that really is the blueprint. That's the federal blueprint for identification, enrollment, stability, and success at our nation's schools. That requires every school district to have a liaison, requires students to be immediately enrolled, even if they don't have paperwork, transportation for school stability to stay in the same school, make school an oasis of stability when everything else in a youth's life is turned upside down. So that really is where the main protections that youth who are experiencing homelessness have in their K-12 education. And then you see in the other statutes I won't go over in early childhood and higher ed, really our attempt at the national level to try to McKinney-Vento-ize, to make McKinney-Vento a verb, and remove those barriers in this full spectrum of learning from prenatal through post-secondary. On the next slide, I want to spend a little bit of time on the next two slides in particular before turning it over to Rod, who'll talk about some of the state policy levers and our state policy work specifically. But this slide looks at Alaska's allocation from the federal McKinney-Vento Education for Homeless Children and Youth program. So you can see what Alaska typically receives in terms of its federal allocation and the number of school districts in the state that are able to receive a dedicated grant as a result of that funding and some of those uses of funds. So it's pretty broad in terms of outreach, transportation, staffing, supplies, those sorts of things. And you'll hear in the testimony after ours exactly how those are put into place in Anchorage. But I also want to talk about the American Rescue Plan homeless children and youth funding. This was part of the last federal pandemic package. It was 8 times the typical amount of money. And it was advocated for specifically because the other federal funding packages for COVID weren't reaching homeless students. So the state of Alaska played a leading role. Both senators, Senator Murkowski led this. Senator Sullivan was on the amendment as well. And it's a significantly more money. Many more school districts in the state are getting funding through this. It's much more flexible. Things like store cards, gas cards, car repair, all of these things. Again, you'll hear more from Dave later about how all of those are being put into place. Our concern with these funds now is the timeline. They have to be obligated by September. Many schools are telling their homeless liaisons you have to spend by June. And there's a lot of money still left on the table. So here, our advocacy really is about pushing Congress to extend that deadline so that schools can spend effectively, they can spend strategically, they can sustain what's in place. And that's really a major point of our emphasis now. Because again, based on the last data, it looks like Alaska still has about 55% of its funds left on the table. Next slide before I turn it over to Rod is just to sort of emphasize broadly what we see that's working and to make the point that students who are experiencing homelessness can and do succeed. Just this morning, I had a phone call. I didn't recognize the number. It was an Arkansas number. Didn't pick it up. Then I got a text. It was a young man in our scholarship program from many years ago calling to ask if he could use our logo on a research presentation he was giving, and he let me know he was 1 year away from having his MD. So there is tremendous potential in these students. And what we know works, people. We need to make sure that we have trained school staff who know what the definition of homelessness is, can identify, can support, can have those site-based contacts and mentors. That's where we see the graduation rates go up. Reviewing policies that get in the way, that may create a barrier, that has to be a continual process. New policies get in place, but they don't account for homelessness, and we need to look at those. Obviously, the outreach and the identification, so we're truly identifying every student experiencing homelessness to make sure that they get the protections. School stability, you have to be in school, you have to be in the same school in order to succeed. Looking at how we accrue credit and make sure that students get credit for work that they've done. If I showed up to work every day and I didn't get paid, I wouldn't want to show up. So we need to make sure that we're awarding those credits appropriately, and then really re-engaging and building trust, which has been lost in the pandemic, and using flexible services to do that. So just a broad sort of national view and framing, and I'm going to turn it over now to Rod to talk about some of the state work.
Before you begin, Rod, if you could hold for a moment, I'm going to see if there's any questions from our committee members.
Just a quick question.
President Stevens.
Thank you. Thank you, and I appreciate the comments. You haven't mentioned mental health issues. Is there any assistance through the programs you're dealing with that will help young people who need some mental health assistance?
Yeah, we know there are significant and much higher risk for mental health challenges, and the funds definitely can be used for those purposes as well. And in fact, we're seeing more mobile mental health and other outreach like that as well. So, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Montz. If you could please identify yourself for the record, it's good to see you again as well. And then also begin your presentation when you are ready.
Thank you. Good to be with you again as well. I am Rod Montz. I am the Director of State Policy here at Schoolhouse Connection. And I also want to express my appreciation for this opportunity to talk to the committee about the important work needed to help youth experiencing homelessness. I'll pick up at slide 11, and I just have a handful of slides to go through. Starting with one addressing some of the key state policy levers aimed at addressing some of the issues that Barbara highlighted, including policy reform to better support youth experiencing homelessness from pre-K through 12th grade, those who are dealing with frequent mobility, by policy reform that addresses laws related to credit accumulation, alternative diplomas, and alternative disciplinary strategies, things that take homelessness into account. Secondly, promoting access to post-secondary education and completion of college vocational programs. This includes laws aimed at increasing FAFSA completion, providing tuition and fee waivers, and prioritizing homeless students for housing and other important campus supports. And a third lever is promoting early childhood so that families with young children who are experiencing homelessness get better access to quality care and early education so they can build a strong foundation for later academic success. And also improving access to resources that help families stabilize housing. And I'll lift up a few state policy examples, starting with one related to housing. The state of Washington passed and recently expanded the Bipartisan Homeless Student Stability Act, which is a statewide competitive grant program aimed at boosting housing stability by facilitating greater collaboration between housing and education sectors, among other things. Maine legislators recently passed a bipartisan bill that allows McKinney-Vento liaisons to help the family of students that they serve with direct emergency assistance for things like rent, utility payments, and critical repairs that could threaten the family's ability to remain in their homes. When it comes to graduation, I'll lift up a bill that passed in Kentucky aimed at addressing some of the issues related to partial credits, student enrollment, and helping students stay on track through graduation, which is a challenge for those highly mobile students who tend to move from district to district and have some challenges when it comes to accumulating enough credits to graduate. And finally, I'll lift up a bill from Florida that we helped with that requires the designation of campus liaisons for homeless and former foster youth pursuing post-secondary educational opportunities, as well as tuition and fee waivers to address the affordability issue related to college and workforce programs. And I'll stop there. I do again want to plug the availability of these examples and a wealth of other policy reform projects that we have worked on and research on other state laws aimed at addressing youth experiencing homelessness and the challenges that confront them, available on our website.
Thank you so much. Any questions from committee members? Well, I do have one question, as I'm very intrigued by your comments of your advocacy work with our federal delegations on advocating for extension of those ARPA funds addressing houseless youth. What could we do to help support that work so that those remaining 50% of Alaska dollars get into the hands of the communities that need it? Did we just lose everybody? Brief at ease. We're back on the record here in Senate Education. We're sorry about those technical difficulties. Do you need me to repeat my question?
I heard just the first part, so yes, that would be wonderful, please.
Thank you. My question was regarding the ARPA funds that you indicated were expiring and that Alaska still has about 50% of those dollars still sitting on the table. What can we do to ensure that those get into the hands of the communities that need them?
Again, the best answer is more time, because you have so few school districts that ever had these before that are, you know, needing more time. The data that we have shows that the state spent more energy on the bigger pot of fund. So the number one ask would be to urge Alaska's congressional delegation to change the deadline to September 2025 and to do that with the budget bill that they're working on now. That would be the number one ask. And I think, you know, there have been trainings. Dave can talk more about that. So the word is getting out, but we just need more time to, again, spend wisely, meet needs as they arise, not just buy a bunch of coats, you know, but really, really invest the funds wisely. So that's the ask, is to, you know, ask the congressional delegation to change that 4 to a 5.
Thank you very much. Well, seeing no other questions from our committee members here, I want to thank you again. This was very informative and very helpful.
Thank you.
We will now be moving on to our next presentation, which is from the Anchorage School District, as they are facing a pronounced youth homelessness problem. Lika McCulkey is the district's Director of Federal Programs. I had the privilege of volunteering with her when she was a principal at Willowa Elementary, and so I'm excited to have her here today. We also have David Mayo Keeley. I apologize if I pronounce that incorrectly, who is the program coordinator for the Children in Transition program for the Anchorage School District. Both folks are participating today, as you can see, via Teams. If you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation when you are ready.
Good afternoon. My name is Lika McCauley, and I'm the Federal Programs Director for the Anchorage School District. I'll pause for a moment so my colleague Dave can introduce himself for the record.
Yes, and my name is Dave Mayo Kiley. I'm the coordinator for the Child in Transition Program and also the homeless liaison for the Anchorage School District.
Well, we're really excited to be able to share our information with you today. I'm going to be doing the first half of the presentation, and then Dave will take over on the second half. So if we could go ahead and move to slide two. We're going to cover some of the information that Barbara and Rod also covered, but kind of at a more specific level with how that plays out in Anchorage School District as the largest district in Alaska. We have some information just about how we determine eligibility following the guidance. The eligibility for our CIT program is a lacking of fixed, regular, and adequate nighttime residence. So that might include students who are living at shelters, families who are sharing housing, not necessarily by a social choice, but based on economic constraints of needing to pool money together. Families that are living in substandard housing, whether that's more people in the house living area than it's intended for, or other inadequate resources such as lack of water or adequate heating, things like that. Students also that might be living in motels, transitional housing, or possibly sleeping in a vehicle. Next slide, please. The way that we identify students experiencing homelessness would be through a student housing questionnaire, through referrals that we're hearing from schools, many community partners, as well as self-referral. As Barbara alluded to, we do have information in the field that there are more students impacted than are being identified, but these are the main ways that we are finding the students. Next slide. As far as the numbers in Anchorage School District of students that have been identified for our program, you can see that it's, you know, somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 over the past several years. You can also see that there's a dip in the percentage of our total enrollment of students identified during that pandemic time, where we might not have had as many eyes on students, as well as the fact that there were other supports pushed out for families during that time. But you can see that we're back up to 4.25% of our school district enrollment accessing the program. And on the far right column, you can also see how many of those are older students that are unaccompanied. They're not living with their families. Next slide. As far as the program enrollment, the goal is always for immediate enrollment, making sure that we're not pausing when a student is ready to come to school, making sure that we can engage with them very quickly. So for new to Anchorage students, we do provide assistance through our programs to enroll them at the school of the school zone area in which they're living. The documentation requirements that are typically required for joining the school system are waived for a period of time. So schools require immunizations and birth certificates and transcripts. The goal is to get the students in the classroom as soon as possible. One of the specific reasons might also be that often in cases of domestic violence, those families might be moving from a household to a household pretty quickly. So that's just one example of why those requirements might be waived. Next slide. The program's goal is to also support maintaining the school of origin within the school year if that's in the best interest for the student. So we have many times that students are moving to different areas around town, and so the goal is to provide that school stability in times when the housing is not as stable, and then providing that assistance during the full duration of the time that the family experiences homelessness. That can be within one school year for some families, and for other families, it might be over a period of multiple years. Next slide. This is just an example of the mobility level of our families. You can see on the left-hand column the number of students that are impacted by the middle, which would be kind of the anchor of this information, is how many addresses does a family have during a school year? We've recorded how many students and households have 3, 4, 5 or more addresses, as well as the total down at the bottom of the number of students and households that are affected. And with that, I would like to turn it over to Dave.
Thank you. So kind of on that last slide that Lika showed of the highly mobile families that we have, one of the ways that we provide that school stability is through transportation. And so each year, the Anchorage School District, out of our general fund, allocates $500,000 for that school of origin transportation. We do that via ASD school buses, gas reimbursement, public transportation, and then a lot of taxi cabs to get our kids to and from school. And really, that school stability is sort of the teeth in the McKinney Vento Homeless Assistance Act. We really just want to make sure that those kids, that if they've got four or five different addresses in a school year, they're not going to four or five different schools. Next slide. Oh, I think I might be two slides behind now. We should be on slide 9, supportive services. So we could kind of cover some of the basics of what we do with our program. But every time we qualify a student for our program or a family, we want to wrap around services with them as best as we can. So we always ask families, do you need backpacks with school supplies? We can provide that to all of our families. We do winter gear in the wintertime. Want to make sure that kids are fully participating in schools. So we try to provide snow pants and boots for kids that are in elementary schools. So they go to recess. High school students, we try to provide coats. We also want to try to get families out of our program as quickly as we can. So we do a lot of referrals to community partners, whether that be housing services through Cook Inlet Housing Authority, NeighborWorks Alaska, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. We do a lot of referrals to them. Other community partners like Salvation Army, Catholic Social Services, Lutheran Social Services, any kind of program that's out there that may benefit our students and families, we try to refer to. Fortunately, through some of our partners like Cook Inlet Housing Authority, we can do a homeless verification, which moves that family further up the wait list on their housing programs. We also do a lot of early childhood referrals, whether they be to PIC, our own EIS services, our preschool services. We also have partnerships with Cook Inlet Native Head Start, Rural CAPS Head Start Program, and KCI as well, really to get those young kids involved in education as early as possible. Next slide. And then we also do a lot of academic support. As Barbara mentioned previously, a lot of our students are underperforming their housed peers. We have very high chronic absentee rates, and also we have a lot of students that are not on track to graduate. So we've done a lot of kind of unique things within Anchorage. We have a Back on Track classroom, which is actually in Covenant House, Alaska, downtown. We've had a long partnership with them for a very long time. We actually have an Anchorage classroom there, and we do two programs there, really aimed at credit recovery. We do an evening class there where kids that go to other high schools in the district can come there at night and earn credit. They get an Apex classes, and so we're really targeting those kids that are credit deficient and getting them credit so they can graduate with their peers. There are non-homeless students in that classroom, but really one of the target populations are those students who are experiencing homelessness. We also do a Wednesday evening tutoring program for those students. If they bring classwork every week, we do it on Zoom. We have teachers that are there to give assistance. They sometimes take Apex classes too. And then if they show up, I believe, for 90% of the classes each semester, they also earn elective credit. So they bring homework, they have to do it, and they can earn not just coursework, but they also earn elective credit as well. We also do summer programs for our students in June. It's a fairly highly intensive, again, on credit recovery. We know a lot of our students are credit deficient, so we're always trying to find ways to get them credits so they can graduate from the Anchorage School District. Next slide. So the overall program costs to the Anchorage School District, we have the $500,000, which we do for ASD general funders for transportation, and then the remaining sources, we get to $1.7 million. One of the big things that really helped in the past several years is the American Rescue Plan's Homeless Children and Youth 1 and 2. When these funds were released, we were extremely excited. Our programs typically do not receive a lot of funding, yet we have a lot of needs with our students. So really what we wanted to use the funds for was to do some identification, but then also really supporting our students in the schools and also providing more access to credit recovery services. Next slide. So one thing that we have never really had for the CIT students is actually a person in the schools that's really dedicated to serving them. We certainly have allies in schools, whether they be counselors, whether they be nurses, certain teachers, but we've never had that one person that student can go to and say, you know, I'm part of the CIT program, I need some assistance with this. The funding from the federal government enabled us to partner with our English Language Learner program and put a person in each of our largest high schools in Anchorage. They've done a number of great things. They can check in on students. If they're missing classes, they check in with students to see how their grades are going. Some schools have done kind of lunchtime get-togethers with those students. They just have a conversation to let those students know they have an ally in the building. We also supported two social service coordinators in our Back on Track classroom that are in that classroom in Covenant House, Alaska. Next slide. In addition to that, we did a lot of those flexible things that Barbara referenced also. We did mobile hotspots for students when they couldn't get access to internet. We had smartphones for our secondary students. They could be in touch with our staff. So if they were moving frequently, they could let us know where they were. We did funds for car repairs. If we have a family that's driving their students to school in a car and we're reimbursing that gas cost, if that car breaks down and they can no longer transport, we'd have to have them go in a taxi cab to get to and from school. And so oftentimes a car repair is much cheaper than using a taxi cab for the remaining of the school year. And then we also did, we sent a lot of our staff to the National Association for the Education of Homeless Children and Youth annual conference. Next slide. So moving forward, unfortunately, as Barbara referenced, the ARP HCY funds are coming to a close. And so as we move forward, we're looking for ways to make sure we can keep those supports in place. And our federal programs are working kind of closely to make sure we don't have gaps in that. But at this point in time, without additional funds, some of those positions may go unfunded in the future. And I'm happy to answer any questions folks might have. Thank you for the time.
Thank you so much. This was very informative. I'm not seeing any questions from committee members, but I do have one, and I'm going to try to figure out how to frame it correctly. But we've been hearing quite a bit about charter schools in the last few weeks, and I'm curious if you know of many houseless or homeless youth who are able to access charter schools, and what would be some of the barriers or the struggles those students would have in accessing charter schools within the system that we have today.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Senator Tobin. We do have a number of students that access charter schools. We have students at the Alaska Native Charter Cultural Charter School. We have students at other charter schools as well. The transportation becomes a little bit tricky, and this is sort of into the weeds of the McKinney-Vento Homeless Assistance Act. If a family is attending a charter school that does not provide transportation and they then become homeless, we can provide transportation to that charter school. If a family is homeless and chooses to go to a charter school, we would not provide transportation assistance to that school because it's a choice. If that family then subsequently has a homeless move, so they're moving from one doubled up place with a friend or family member to another doubled up situation, at that point in time, we could provide transportation assistance. But we try to make sure that within the Anchorage School District, we support families choice in education. We just cannot always provide that transportation assistance. Other services we would provide, we can still do that, but the transportation piece is kind of contingent on the individual situation.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, may I add on to that?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that in the Anchorage School District, our charters are within the public system. I know some of the conversation at the state level has been for private charters. And so I did want to just clarify that point, that Anchorage School District, being a district of school choice, does have publicly funded charter schools. And so, yes, there's representation there. Some of the barriers that could also happen is different requirements for family involvement or volunteerism or things like that may or may not impact a family's ability to enter or remain in a charter. In a charter program, but the one clarifying difference I wanted to make sure that we discussed was that in the bigger scope of charter, that in Anchorage, we are talking about publicly funded charters that are part of the Anchorage School District.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that clarification. Any additional questions? Well, thank you both. I really appreciate your comments and your information here today. I had the opportunity to look at the 2023 report card and saw that many of our youth experiencing houselessness, I think they had an 86% attendance rate, which is pretty amazing.
Thank you for your time today.
Moving on to our final presentation today, we will be hearing from the National Center for Homeless Education, which operates under the U.S. Department of Education's Technical Assistance Center for the Education for Homeless Youth and for the Education of Homeless Children and Youth Program. We have Eric Gerbing, I apologize if I mispronounced that, who is the co-director of the National Center for Homelessness Education and project director for SERV in Greensboro, North Carolina. Eric is a former high school teacher and holds a Bachelor of Science degree in electrical engineering from MIT. He's also holds a PhD in educational evaluation and policy analysis from North Carolina State University. Mr. Gerbing, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation when you are ready. I think you might still be on mute. Brief at ease. We're back on the record here in Senate Education. It's 4:06 p.m. Mr. Gerbing, if you heard my introduction, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation when you are ready.
I did. Thank you. My name is Eric Gerbing. I'm the co-director of the National Center for Homeless Education. It's a privilege to be here with you today. So NCHE, or the National Center for Homeless Education, is a technical assistance center for the U.S. Department of Education. And so our role is to provide resources and services to the field. And we work with educators across the country on implementing the McKinney-Vento Act. Our center is based at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro, but we have a staff of 10 that live all across the United States. And so our team has several former state and local coordinators of education for students experiencing homelessness, and they bring a wealth of experience and expertise to the field. I just wanted to note today that I've buried a lot of links within the presentation today for various resources. If you have questions after the presentation, I also have my personal contact information in the final slide as well, if there's anything that we need to follow up about after today's meeting. So on slide number 3 on topics, I'm going to briefly walk through a couple of high-level pieces today, many of which have already been touched on, so I'm going to go a little bit faster through some of those sections where there is some repeat material, but basically want to help you better understand what the McKinney-Vento Act is, some data about students experiencing homelessness in Alaska, and then give you an idea of some of the funding sources and the role of the local homeless liaison. So on the next slide, we have some basic information about the McKinney-Vento definition of homelessness, and this really just reinforces a lot of what you've already heard today, but really it's built on that triad of fixed, regular, and adequate when it comes to housing and assessments are made, whether students are eligible for the McKinney-Vento program. This definition continues with a lot of pieces that aren't on this slide, but talk about specific circumstances in which students are considered to be experiencing homelessness. So this includes, we've heard the term doubled up used, so that's sharing the houses of other persons due to loss of housing, economic hardship, or a similar reason. Also, students who are living in motels, hotels, trailer parks, or campgrounds due to the lack of alternative adequate accommodations. I also want to make a note here about language, and I think you've noticed that across our presentations today, we've talked a lot about students experiencing homelessness or students experiencing houselessness. I just wanted to note that in various information about this topic, you will see the abbreviation HCY. That is generally used in a lot of the federal work. It stands for Homeless Children and Youth. It's an unfortunate moniker there that we try to avoid whenever possible, and we try to use that term, students experiencing homelessness. So you'll see that abbreviation SEH in a lot of the places in my presentation. On the next slide, I also want to talk about a subset of students experiencing homelessness, and that is the topic of unaccompanied homeless youth. And so these are students who may need some additional support to access their education. And so this includes any children or youth experiencing homelessness that are not in the physical custody of a parent or guardian. And so at the local level, liaisons must assist these students with enrollment, school selection, and dispute resolution. But these students have exactly the same right to immediate enrollment and educational services as any other students, including those also covered by the McKinney-Vento Act. I also wanted to share a bit about this population because it's an important one for us to consider, in that 35% of unaccompanied youth have experienced death of at least one parent or caregiver. 44% have been in foster care. And 24% experienced homelessness with their families before becoming unaccompanied. So there's a lot of different facets to this. And we heard that term intersectionality used earlier as well, that it's really important to think about that there are a lot of situations that lead to students experiencing homelessness. And thus, we have to be differentiated in the supports that are provided to them. So on the next slide, I want to transition now to talk about some data on students experiencing homelessness in Alaska. And a lot of this you may have already seen today, so I'll go through this a little bit more quickly than I was planning before. So you'll notice here really reinforces information that Barbara shared, that the numbers were highest right before the pandemic, and those numbers are starting to rise again of the number of students identified as experiencing homelessness. I will note just some national context that that rate of 2.4% across the state is actually equal to the rate across the entire United States. So it's a similar proportion of students who are identified as being served by the McKinney-Vento Act as across the entire country. On the next slide, we also like to show the distribution of students served by McKinney-Vento across grade levels. And what you'll note is that we have a little bit of a smaller number in preschool, and that's due to just fewer students being enrolled in preschool period. But if you look at grades kindergarten through grade 10, it's pretty remarkably consistent across the grades, where it's between 1.9% and 2.5% of enrolled students who are identified as McKinney-Vento students. I want to draw your attention to the right side of this graph, and that you look as we go into grade 11 and grade 12, that those percentages do increase there. And I don't offer a lot of additional context on that particular number, but it is an interesting element to understanding who is being identified in the state and who is being served by McKinney-Vento. On the next slide, we also want to talk about identification across the state. And I think we encounter a lot of times myths that homelessness is only an urban issue, and that is really not true, and that students experiencing homelessness in settings across the country here. What we wanted to show, though, was this filled map that helps to indicate the percentage of overall enrolled students who were identified as experiencing homelessness through McKinney-Vento. I will note here that we labeled two local education agencies, or LEAs, on this map. One was Anchorage, which we've heard from, and I was really pleased to be able to hear about some of the great things that team is doing there. They are the LEA with the highest enrollment, and in fact, over half of the students enrolled across the state experiencing homelessness are in the Anchorage School District. We also wanted to note the district with the highest percentage that is in more of a rural area as well. But as we look across the state here, we also like to look at one of the things that we monitor at NCHE is the making sure that students who are experiencing homelessness are being identified for services. And just as a note here, in the last school year where we have robust data from 21-22, about half of the school districts across the state identified some students experiencing homelessness. But there were also about half of the districts that did not report or identify any students experiencing homelessness. So there is an opportunity, I think, for additional work for local liaisons to be able to identify students who may be experiencing homelessness that haven't surfaced yet within the school system. On the next slide, we also wanted to share a little bit of data. This is similar to one of the slides that Barbara shared about primary nighttime residents among students experiencing homelessness. If you'll notice here, the vast majority of students are in doubled up situations, although we do see about 20% of all students experiencing homelessness in the state that are in shelters. About 11% are in hotels and motels, and the others are unsheltered. I also wanted to compare this to that subset of students of unaccompanied homeless youth, that an even larger percentage of those students are living in doubled up situations there. And so just to give you a little bit more context on what that primary nighttime residence looks like. On the next slide, we'll also see that this is a cross-cutting issue across all students from different races and ethnicities. And if you look here in the bold categories, those are groups that are overrepresented in terms of homelessness. So more or less, there is a larger proportion of students from those race and ethnicity groups who are experiencing homelessness versus those enrolled in schools overall. And these figures are similar to those disproportionalities that we see across the entire country. On the next slide, we've got a little bit of information about statewide academic proficiency. And so just to look here, that this reinforces the notion that students who are economically disadvantaged do achieve on state tests at lower rates in both reading, language arts, and math, and that students experiencing homelessness even experience a slightly lower success rate than students who are economically disadvantaged. So there are implications as well for academic achievement. And finally, on the data slide here, we have a little bit more information about the adjusted cohort graduation rate. I know that we've already heard about that from Barbara, so I won't belabor that here. But again, that gap between economically disadvantaged students and students who experienced homelessness is similar to what we see at the national level as well within the state of Alaska. So I want to transition now to talk a little bit more about funding. We've already heard quite a bit about the ARP-HCY funding, and so I'm not going to go into heavy detail on that. But in general, I wanted to talk about some of the broader funding sources for HCY programs. And so these funds come from a variety of sources. We've talked a lot about the federal funding today, and our work at NCHE is very much focused on that federal funding. But we also encourage localities and states to think about how to blend, braid, and figure out how to amplify the use of state and local education funds with community partners and foundations, as well as those federal funds, to really think creatively about ways to serve students. So I wanted to talk a bit about some of these federal funds in a little bit more detail. And so all states receive McKinney-Vento grants from the U.S. Department of Education based on the state's proportion of the Title I Part A allocation. States reserve a portion of these funds to support the Office of the State Coordinator, and they conduct statewide activities. And then they also provide flow-through subgrants to districts through a competitive process to support local programming. And currently, there are 6 LEAs within Alaska who are McKinney-Vento subgrants, at least as of the 21-22 school year. Now, the purpose of the Title I Part A funds is to provide all children with a significant opportunity to receive a fair, equitable, and high-quality education. And so districts are instructed to set aside a portion of their Title I-A funds to support the unique needs of students experiencing homelessness. And so these funds can be used to cover things like additional transportation costs and other sources to help provide stability and consistency for students to be able to attend their school of origin. I'll also talk about that within those McKinney-Vento subgrants, that the funds to districts and to charter schools can be used to establish programs and services that meet the purpose of the McKinney-Vento Act, which is really to promote the enrollment, attendance, and success of students experiencing homelessness in school. So services provided with these funds, they can't replace the regular academic program, but they must be designed to expand upon or improve services provided as part of the full academic program. Now, we also talked a little bit about the ARP-HCY funds again, but I will just reinforce that this is a big national issue right now in terms of making sure that these funds are utilized before they go away. And again, just want to reinforce that the obligation deadline currently for those funds is September 30th of 2024. I'm going to skip the slide on ARP-HCY because we've already heard quite a bit about that. But I do want to spend a moment here on the slide about additional resources regarding funding. And just wanted to put you in touch with, we have a wealth of resources on our websites. So that's nche.ed.gov. We have a few recent resources that are particularly relevant for this conversation today that I invite you to take a look at if you'd like some additional information on those pieces. Finally, I want to cover a few topics on the duties of local McKinney-Vento liaisons. And so on the next slide here, the McKinney-Vento Act requires that each LEA have a local liaison. And the duties of these liaisons are many. So included in these duties are to ensure that students experiencing homelessness are identified. They ensure immediate enrollment and access to services. They provide information about the rights and opportunities, and this includes meaningful opportunities for parents to participate in their children's education, transportation, school meals, and other programs. They ensure disputes are mediated, and they may affirm housing and urban development programs for students that meet McKinney-Vento eligibility criteria. So it is a large role, and it is something that is guaranteed within the McKinney-Vento Act. On the next slide here, we could spend an entire session just talking about the duties of the local liaison, but they're also responsible to support unaccompanied homeless youth in school selection and dispute resolution, ensure that unaccompanied homeless youth are provided verification of their status for FAFSA purposes. They provide training and other support for school personnel. They provide referrals to services in the community, collaborate and coordinate services with state coordinators, community and school personnel. And this also includes collecting and reporting data. So it's fantastic that we were able to hear from the local liaisons within Anchorage. And just know that this is a support that is designed to be in place across all school districts across the country. Finally here, I wanted to just lift up a few additional NCHE resources that you may find useful after today's presentation. I'll note that the Homeless Liaison Toolkit is extremely helpful. It's quite a lengthy document, but if you want details about all of the different functions of that particular role, that is a great place to look. In addition to that, we've also included some additional content-specific slides as an addendum to this presentation. So if you want some additional information about transportation, school of origin, and other things that are covered by the McKinney-Vento Act, there are resources there and also on our website as well. And finally there, you should have a slide for questions, and then my contact information is right after that as well. I just really appreciate the opportunity to be with you today and talk about this important issue, and look forward to any questions that you might have.
Thank you so much. That was a wonderful presentation. Any questions from committee members? Any questions for any of our presenters today? President Stevens.
Just a real simple question. What's the breakdown of girls and boys in homeless condition situations?
That is a data point that I unfortunately do not have at my fingertips here. I will need to get back to you on that. I apologize for not having that at the ready today.
Well, not crucial. I'm just curious as to how that works.
Well, thank you. Barbara, Rod, do you might have that information at your fingertips?
Nope.
Well, thank you so much. I don't see any additional questions. I do want to thank all of our presenters today. This was very helpful information and dovetails well with our presentation from last week on chronic absenteeism, and helps provide and unpack a little bit about what might be included in those rates, those very high rates of chronic absenteeism here in the state of Alaska. Well, seeing as no other questions from our committee members, this concludes our agenda for the day. The next meeting of Senate Education Committee will be Wednesday, January 31st, where we will hear a presentation on prenatal to three systems of care in Alaska. Senate Education will not be meeting Friday, February 2nd. With that, I do want to invite everyone to a lunch and learn this Wednesday from 12 to 12:45 p.m. in the Butcherovich Fahrenkamp room, where we will be hearing from presenters on a comprehensive and collaborative system to ensure children, youth, and families thrive. It is with our partners at Alaska Children's Trust, where we will be talking about the establishment of Alaska Children's Caucus. As there is no other business before the committee today, I will adjourn today at 4:25 p.m.